Start of interview with N.J.L. Jantz, 21st of September, 1967.
What is the role of the GA of the day in the face of increasing specialization and increasing activity by specialized departments?
The GA today is really a coordinator. He's not, as in the old days, the operator. Just basic
I know that recently the Rajendra committee recommended that giving the CA more powers so that he can coordinate. This would imply that over the previous decade, his importance has declined and his authority has declined.
No, it's not like this. You see, in the old days, the GA means not merely has the function, he has the title to that. Government agent was the chief lands officer, he was the chief agriculture officer, he was the superintendent of the police, he was the magistrate, he was all sorts of things. He had the right. The result that he was able to give orders and get the orders carried out. Today, everything has been so increased in the land, business lands, there is a land development officer, a land officer there. It's true he functions through the GA, but he got to the land division. There are the police who have really no relationship with the GA today. There are the various other people like irrigation, agriculture. They are all more or less autonomous in their own state there. So the GA problem is he can't coordinate purely by virtue of being. Because he has no absolutely no status vis-a-vis the other department. So I think what Rajendra probably contemplated was that, for instance, in respect to the irrigation department, the government agent should be ex-officio or a deputy director or something like that. Rather like the old age. Otherwise, he just would do it. So, it takes came to the food control. They have the same thing. You know, every government agent is a deputy food control by office. So, he has power, statutory power, as well as others.
Do you think the running of certain administrative matters? Say even schools or
cottage industries
can be left to local
bodies
within,
say,
a broad framework of policy.
I don't think local bodies have developed enough to do anything like that. To make it isolated cases or enlighten people to them. By and large, I don't think they are.
Okay. What do you mean by developed enough?
So one thing, people, the local representatives have not taken their job seriously. They don't know what is required to get begin. There is no sense of responsibility, there is no no right approach there. See, most people, they take village councils, I think most people getting the village council for the influence are free. Not for what service they can perform. So unless you have the concept of service, obviously you can't get this kind of stuff.
In fact, another problem arising from the modern pressures is that the bureaucracy gets more and more impersonal. And
that's completely impersonal. So then the problem only exists on paper, and the solution on paper is the final answer. The solution may be completely impracticable when applied to the problem outside.
So how does one bring about practicalness and
sort of humane? Well, I think the first thing is to decide how far the public service should go, how far the state should go in interfering or that, like intervening in the lives of the people. They've gone pretty far. This, should they go further or should they be withdrawn? That's the first thing to decide. I think you take that decision, you can't really say what sort of public service you need and what your public service is. Eventually, if they are going to interfere 100% in the lives of the people as in a communist state, then it doesn't matter what the public service is and what it does. But all the, disadvantages are shown up now because of the comparison. There are still a few sectors that people can do as they like. You see? And the difference between where they can do as they like and where they can't do as they like are shown up so boldly.
But in view of the increasing democracy, What is ironical is that with the technological advancements, you get increase in expertism, and the expert has power because he can say, "I'm expert. You can't tell me what I should say in this matter. This is my technical advice." And in that sense, decision experts, even maybe managerial experts, are removed from popularity.
Yes. Well, this democracy is a very religious term. Have you heard the old phrase, British justice is like the rich, but then it's open to all?
What are the implications there?
Well, very few can afford to go into the rich.
One wonders if the British brought law rather than justice.
Yes, they brought law, I think. I mean, maybe that the British forms of the British concept of the new democracy is completely unsuited in this part of the world. So we have to evolve our own form. Certainly, you will never get a job done in Ceylon if everybody has the right to say no straight away, which is the case today.
Problem of people wanting everything and not giving anything in return.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, now, in view of the fact that so many of our politicians speak of socialism and a socialist society, I was thinking that the welfare state concept is one of the primary obstacles to socialism. In the sense that the welfare state is paternalistic
state. We have a combination of both states. Practically every public utility is still on. I think without any exception, is state-owned. Yeah, I think there is not a single exception.
Then?
It's virtually all the conditions are there totally state. State-owned everything.
Treasury controls are far too rigid and extend too far in the sense that they should be limited to budgetary controls.
Yeah.
Could you amplify that?
Do you know the day-to-day extent of the requirement that the Treasury has to consult on various things? Now, for example, when the budget is framed, your staff cadres have to be settled. Any new posts have to be settled then. Salary scales have to be settled in accordance with the rules. Once the parliament passes that budget, I don't see any reason why anybody should have to go to the Treasury or to any other authority for permission to fill a particular post or for permission to spend some money out of the board of expenditure. There are all those peculiar requirements. I take this question of the corporation, the other day I mentioned to you, especially people leaving Ceylon on a particular business.
Yes.
Treasury is particularly provided for in the budget. The foreign exchange is provided for. It's all approved. Then why should somebody have to go and seek approval to man going?
What was the corporation?
My own corporation, State Fertilizer Manufacturing Corporation. And two people were going to India to visit fertilizer factories there to have discussion with the fertilizer people, project manager and one of the directors. And we had to get the approval of the Prime Minister's office. We couldn't get it in time. So the trip had to be postponed. I mean, we couldn't get it in time to suit the Indian program. Now, why the Prime Minister's approval? Surely ministers, there are ministerial colleagues, have tremendous responsibility for their own portfolio. Can't they be trusted to authorize or not authorize somebody leaving Ceylon?
Yes, when it has already been provided for.
Already provided for and approved. Some public office at some stage, for some probably good reason, thought that there should be this control, and it was introduced. And nobody has bothered to think whether it's necessary, whether it's a good thing or not. And it just goes on. And in the process, what is happening is that some very junior official somewhere is doing the doing. It's not serving any purpose.
I wonder whether all these prashnikas souls resulted from basically from
this
trust and also from
the
old British tradition.
It's the old British tradition, we are still using practical world financial regulations and other regulations.
But in your article, you mentioned that
permanent
secretaries are
chief
accounting officers, but they don't, in fact, fulfill this role.
Yes, they are chief accounting officers under the financial regulations. That's my point. Once the budget is approved by Parliament, the permanent secretary is the only final authority within the administration.
You also suggest that the more delegation of responsibility is in
what way? They dedicate the department just to a secretary. He must go to the head. Or an assistant secretary can't take a decision, he's got to go to the permanent secretary. Or the permanent secretary can't take a decision, he's got to go to the minister. So this is simple, straightforward thing.
So that doesn't support my earlier point that responsibility has to be defined more clearly, then.
It has to be defined more clearly. There is a semblance of, shall I say, a delegation of responsibility. Mm. But what happens if you delegate your powers to somebody and that person doesn't act? So what do you do about it? The delegation is there. But that's why I said there must be accountability, not only to action, but for failure to act. For omission. To be independent of private sector. If you don't do something, it is just as bad as you do something wrong.
One point in your article I was inclined to challenge, I think at the outset itself, you suggest that it's not so much due to personnel, but the fact that people are slaves to a system.
Yeah.
But in fact, we're reading further on and thinking about it, I'm inclined to think that there's a failure of individual.
One breeds the other. You see, now I can tell you from my experience. As individuals, those in the public sector, right along the line, from class right to the top, are far superior in caliber, in education, in capacity, in everything, to those in the private sector. But why is it that the private sector gets a large output? Well, as I said, the system breeds. Take the case of the public servant who knows that, you know, if he takes the decision, that decision is going to be reversed by his minister or by his permanent secretary. For reasons which are not valid, then he's not going to take that decision, or he's going to take the wrong decision. So really, if for instance something perfectly simple has got to be done, but he's got to get somebody's authority, it will take 2 weeks to get it, he just doesn't bother to do it. There's nothing wrong with the man, but he has become eventually, he has reconciled himself and resigned himself to the system to such an extent that he won't do what he can do, or he has to.
Now I was still thinking that if they had a proper orientation, say that they had a sense of character.
But how can you say that the sense of character of the public service is less than that of the private? You could say that. I mean, they're all villainies, drawn from the same box of life.
But for instance, this question of delegation of responsibility, the fact that the head of the department is not willing to take a decision, in a case where politics may not even come into it.
True, but that's something that accrues after time.
Bred by the system.
So it's not very interesting. I mean, in ordinary life, you keep on feeding a chapter, you know. Not allowing him to take a decision, where he's truly reached the stage where he just can't take it. He's incapable.
there has been a criticism of the CTA, as I said in the past, on the ground that it was far too hard-coded, and that the, most of the recruits were hard people. Have you any comments to make on
that? I think that is much more so today. Matter of fact, I believe I published some figures there. Recruitment to the civil service. There was a fair sprinkling of science people in the old days because science people had nothing else they could do. You see? But today there is much less. I can find it. You probably should see there was a definite fall off of science graduates recruited into the public.
What branch of science did you specialize
in? I did see. I heard the criticism that the civil service of Pakata is, which I agree to a certain extent, you know, they were far too self-centered.
Do you think that has diminished now?
No. See, being in the position to decide things themselves, they naturally decided things in their own favor.
Yes, especially the financial.
Oh, it's very unfortunate.
And also, I think, in our situation, to get this, you know, that's from the public service club, that has a certain social...
But you get that even in the private sector, not the planters in the outstation districts have the same sort of relationship with the executives in the head office of the day. That is inevitable.
No, I personally mean harassment, and I'm a bit skeptical of the criticism. Because I think it's superficial in the sense that this can be proved by statistics. Someone has given statistics for the year 47 to 57, that decade. But I think when the exams were formulated, they had in mind they devoted some attention to this and gave scope for everyone. Certainly, I know they gave scope for the general graduate as well as the honors graduate to get in. And if more arts people got in, it might be just because they were more competent, particularly in general knowledge and general civic. And if you admit that these two papers are important, and that the Viva itself is important, and a means of testing people, then your admittance that people didn't come up to.
But the SME general knowledge and Viva were never the deciding factor. I don't think they ever decided any case. No, it's largely a question of, first of all, the relative numbers. In the old days, there were very few science people in proportion to the arts people. The science people had less openings. Now, for instance, having done physics, there was nothing I could have done in Ceylon, except teach. I think even the British have changed that view now. They are going in for specialists more and more. Well, even management today is becoming a specialized field. And within the field of management, there are so many specializations.
But on the other hand, those people who argue for specialization take further and say that permanent secretaries of certain ministries should be technical men, not CCS men, as they are today. Would you agree?
I would agree if they know something about administration. Because you know, the most brilliant technical man in the world could not do an administrative job if he didn't know administration. And administration is also a field of study.
And a field of experience.
Oh, yes. You have to know the basic principles, and it's more experience than theory. Yeah.
But
now, I don't know if you read that particular article, section of this report here. We have suggested that in all these technical departments, there should be technical administrators. But they should be taken at a young age, say after 10 years service, when they have had 10 years to do their technical side of it. Those who show aptitude should then be picked out and given a training in administration and then put into the administrative jobs. They should not be picked out when they are on the verge of the grave. That's what's happening. All the technical departments, the technical heads go there when they are on the verge of retirement. They don't care what's going to happen in the next 2 years, and they don't know anything about administration.
On the other hand, isn't it a waste to take an engineer or an electrician and let him, make him do administration?
No. Not if he has a flair for administration. Because after all, you cannot run any institution without efficient administration. So it's not a waste.
No, I was just thinking of a waste of his engineering.
No, he must have a flair and aptitude for it. You know, I think this is the American practice, and I think British are following it too now. Quite a lot of the top administrators are people with technical background.
But not create a permanent secretary in charge of a ministry with including some technical departments.
Well, that's quite different. A permanent secretary does not have to take technical decisions. But the head of a technical department has to take technical decisions. The permanent secretary purely takes decisions of advisors on policy. And he, in turn, where technical matters are involved, he must be advised by his technical advisor. He doesn't follow that the technical man should be the head of the ministry, because that's a purely administrative job.
And coordinating.
And coordinating more than anything else.
But well, in that sense, the technical man might be just the sort of man who is not suited to that
sense. Well, in the sense that if a ministry comprises several technical departments, nobody can be versed in the techniques of all the departments. You get a technical man, he comes from one department. You take the Ministry of Agriculture, I think it comprises lands, irrigation, agriculture, plus several others. If you get an irrigation man wearing a permanent secretary, he won't know anything about anything else in the other department.
In fact, I wonder how far this system, which is supported by some technicians, you know, with regard to civil service people hogging the permanent secretary, is motivated by...
Oh, they're all on job. That's understandable. No, the reason, there's good reason for that. You see, the reason is that in the old days, in some of the technical departments which did not need general administrators, the civil service usurped their position. So this is just a reaction.
So you think they usurped
the... Oh, yes. But this is a very, very old controversy, you know, whether in a technical department the head should be an administrator and the deputy should be technical, or they should be the other way about. Whether the head should be technical and he should have an administrative advisor as a deputy. I don't think it'll ever be thought. It's a larger question of suitability of the individual. Now you take the railway, Rampala is a first class engineer and a first class administrator. But you can't say the same of a lot of other heads of technical departments. continental offense. I think we did some, we have a chapter on that one also.
Don't you think this is something where the different parties can put their heads together and work out something which will stand for all time, you know, without being too late?
There are always personalities involved.
Yes.
I have a couple of smiles.
You mean having you forced to certain party personnel and things like that? As ministers?
Yes, and certain functions. I'll give you an example now. Mm-hmm. You have the original Ministry of Commerce and Trade.
Yes.
For reasons which may or may not have been valid, they took away import control and put it in the Ministry of State. Now that was, maybe it was necessary, but it does not, it's not conducive to, you know, the preservation of any system.
That's at one level. Just a step lower down, don't you think that within a ministry is there is insufficient coordination?
Oh, sure, yes. Complete lack of it almost, doesn't it?
Someone told me though that in Ministry of Defense and External Affairs, it is not prevail because Kanpai Vajanath got hold of it at the start and made it into a unit. I don't know how far that's correct.
Well, the reason is there are no departments in the ministry. The ministry there is the British pattern of the ministry. In Britain they don't have departments under ministry. No heads of departments, they're all assistant secretaries. We don't have the departments in the ministry.
How did this structure come out? This compartmentalized department within a ministry?
See, they adopted the British system in theory, but they didn't apply it in practice. When ministries were created, when permanent secretaries were created, if they went the whole hog and adopted strictly British pattern of having, you know, the whole ministry house under one roof, with all the heads of departments converted into posts of assistant secretaries, who were really an integral part of the ministry, so I've done the
reason. When I spoke to Arthur
Anathina,
he said this system was there for people to adopt, but, I mean, in theory, but that in practice,
No, I don't think that is entirely correct because the heads of departments were perpetuated. Now today the Ministry of Education has abolished this compartmentalization.
No, but I think his point was that, all right, he still calls general manager railway, but in fact the permanent secretary could have imposed certain controls on it, which were not imposed.
Well, the reason is that under the law, under certain laws, the head of the department still had status to refer. That's the reason.
I was inclined to...
It's a complete nonsense.
So, these amplifications have resulted from the system itself?
Yes.
That is, the
head
of the
system effective.
The departments have too many powers.
Yeah, in other words, they took the existing state system and all they did was create a ministry with a permanent secretary. That Richard Singh became a post office. The departments just continued to function as they used to function. And they had to channel certain communications through the permanent secretary. They did it quite indifferently. And the permanent secretary and his secretaries could make no useful contribution whatsoever to any paper that passed through him. You see, we were just treated as a post office.
Was realized in 47-48, that is a crucial time, and also 31, I think. Did they realize that something was happening? Or was it a mere accident?
I don't think they realized it. But they should have had ample time to realize it now.
I was wondering whether it was also a question of status, you know, general manager railways is known to lose its position.
Oh, yes, sir. All those things are involved. But then railways is not a department anywhere in the world. The railways should be converted into a corporation everywhere. Railways, electrical departments, so they are thinking of having an electrical board for the electricity of the United States. Those public utility services cannot be in departments, cannot be controlled departmentally.
In fact, coming back to corporations, hasn't one problem been the fact that some of the corporate heads are civil servants, and that per se is not bad, but civil servants carry the old bureaucratic controls into the corporation.
Quite true. Quite true.
But this would seem to go against your point that they're slaves of the system. They're being given access.
Well, they have become such slaves to the system that they know no difference.
Yeah, I see.
You see, unless you're a born rebel,